solution to updating or not these resolutions. So I just wanted to provide that little bit of background before we move forward. Any questions? With that, turn it over to Doug. This guy is Mr. Water Resources. He knows everything backwards and forwards, and he's been a great colleague, and I really appreciate him volunteering to join us today.
Thank you, Ray. For the record, Doug Woodcock, Deputy Director, Oregon Water Resources Department. And today, I'm going to talk about a couple of topics. Ray had come over to the office, and I think I had was actually looking for some information from him when he somehow deftly spun that around and said, how'd you like to be at our board meeting on the 20th? So, well played you, Ray. So today we're going to talk about reservations of water and then separately minimum perennial stream flows. I beg your forgiveness on the first topic. The ask was to come talk about Columbia River reservations. And as I was starting to work on that, I realized it didn't make any sense without the context of what reservations are. So I backed off a little bit and we're just calling this reservations. We'll touch on the Columbia River piece. But you need to have that bigger understanding of what reservations are. So, with that, I would we'll start off with the reservations, and I will point out that I'll explain what reservations really are in a little bit of detail in a bit. But just to let you know that they're really a great tool for long range planning, for saying we need a bucket of water reserved, set aside for future use. Near-term needs are better served through our current permitting process, but the reservations are better for the long-term. What's really a challenge is how those long-term set-asides fit into current water management. That is the challenge, and so we'll talk about some of those issues ahead here. Okay, wish me luck. So, reservations are, just as I mentioned a moment before, just a block of unappropriated water. So, I'll tell you that Oregon Water Resources Department has a model that they use. It's called our water availability model, and it's for almost all of the basins across the state. We've got some basins that aren't covered there, but it identifies what the expected natural flow is, how much water is taken out by out-of-stream diversions with a component of a natural or a return flow, how much is captured in reservations, in-stream water rights, so how much water is left over. So what this is looking at is how much of that leftover water, the unappropriated water, is available. So a reservation is a bucket of that unappropriated water, contains a priority date, so you can see the value of that. You're setting aside a block of water for use in the future, but you're using today's priority date. So that's worth something. And then lastly, these reservations are for multi-purpose storage for future development. So they're very general in nature. Heretofore, there has not been a lot of information required in putting these together. I'll step you through how that has changed. But today, this is what we have. That's right. I wanted to go back and talk about the water availability model. So when we take this block of water and we reserve it, put it out there in the future, we subtract that from our water availability model so that as new uses come along and they want to get new permits, they're not stepping on the toes of this reservation that was taken out in 2018, for instance. What they are not, they're just a block of water. They're not a permit to use water. They're not a guarantee of any future water. And they're not a protection against future restrictions. So let me give you some examples around this. So you've got this block of water out there. So in theory, there will be water available for somebody who wants to get a permit, but they have to get a permit to actually use that reservation. It's not a guarantee of future water. What that means is when they're applying for a permit, you're stepped through the standard process using the current standards of the day, not the standards back when the reservation was taken out, but it would be the current standards of the day, and it's not a protection against future restrictions. So the example would be, speaking of Columbia River, Division 33, so that's our ESA protections. Reservations that were taken out some years ago when people apply for permits today, excuse me, it's today's standards using Division 33 that they are up against. That's the filter that's applied when evaluating that application. And by the way, we can ask questions whenever. So to utilize a reservation, as I mentioned, permit is required. And this is, I mentioned in an earlier slide that these reservations were for multi-purpose storage. So if you're going to utilize a reservation, then you're getting a permit to store the water. And then you're getting a secondary permit to actually use that stored water. This is a standard process that we use in water storage today. This isn't specific just to reservations. Somebody will get a primary water right to actually physically store the water, and then others can get secondaries to use that water if it's consistent with the owner's reservoirs and their desires. Step onto the, just looking at, there's a really, really long history of reserving water. It goes back to the early 1900s up to, I would take us up to the bottom of the little arrows there where it says the 1980s. There was a lot of talk of setting water aside, and then in the 80s it actually got to the point where they were calling it reserved water. But there was no statutory authority for doing any of this. So what happens is we have basin programs that speak to water reserved. Again, I would look at the Columbia Basin. I think the John Day is probably another one where it's in our basin program that there is so much water reserved for such and such a use, but without any statutory authority and that never having been adopted. They're just classifications, and they don't really carry anything today. 1987, Senate Bill 140 actually created the authorization to do reservations. It was a combination bill, created in-stream water rights, and then kind of to counter this, all of the water is going. Nope. I will restart later. To counter concerns about all of the water being reserved in stream and taking up all of the water, the reservations was added in there so we could take some blocks of water and actually reserve that for the future. Yes. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Let me see. We'll keep going until it gives us a boot. So just on the rules and statutes, I'm sorry about all the words here, but I think it's telling that we have had so many different steps revising what the process is because it's complicated. The first, there we go.
He wants you to stand by it.
B, yeah. It's a laying on of the hands. So back in 88, so recall that Senate Bill 140 that established the in-stream water rights was in 1987. In 1988, we adopted rules, and the rules essentially set up a process of a contested case hearing. And that on the public interest of actually reserving this water for the future. And that was followed by a rulemaking of the commission amending the basin plan. That's a lot of process. And so in 1982, I think it was ODA that actually came to our commission and said, time out, can we streamline this a little bit? So that was revised in 92. It went to a contested case and then just an order of the commission. There was no rulemaking amending the rules at that, or amending the basin plan at that time. And then in 95, we had a statute come through, 537-249, which said, okay, all of these reservations that we've got standing out there right now, which process do you want? You have your choice here. You can use the current process, which at that time would have been a contested case and an order of the commission. You can just be processed as a permit, which has its whole process and kind of crawling through glass piece to it. And then there was a reservation through rulemaking, and that was ODA's choice on all of the reservations that were pending at that time. And so that, oh, I would point out that when it was revised in 1992, it was renamed Division 79, our rules were, and those are the those are actually the rules that we operate under today, Division 79. So we just updated Division 79 in 2016, and it was really about addressing the extensions process because it was not clear. We had conflicting rules. Things were in conflict with statute. So we updated to get everything consistent to a point, and I'll explain that. So extensions are now, it's clearly articulated, they're allowed up to 20 years. Our commission can allow them up to 20 years. The original priority date is maintained, so as you go forward with your extensions, you're carrying that priority date with you. There are very specific extension information requirements now. They weren't quite so clear before, and these are much more detailed, and I've got some notes here that just the purpose of the reservation, the amount of water, sources of water, whether it's going to be provided by existing storage or whether it's going to be provided by a new storage facility, seasons of use, locations of use, evidence that the proposal is compatible with the overall basin program, the types of use, economic benefits, water source alternatives. There's a lot more information required in these today. What we did not do in this is update applications for new reservations. That is still kind of in its clunky phase. We'll be going back through in the future and updating that. But back in our Division 79, a couple other pieces there, just the commission could extend unless found to be inconsistent with 536.310, and that reference is the state water policy. So that includes the findings must be in the public interest. And then the commission can also modify to make it consistent. So if it comes in inconsistent, if there's things the commission can do to kind of shape it a little bit and still move it forward, they have that authority.
Can I ask a question? This is Stephanie Halleck on the board. What happens at the end of 20 years?
At the end of 20 years, if we have not received any applications, it would be up to the Department of Agriculture to come forward with another request for extension. And I think the ask at that time would be, is it reasonable that this is going to be fulfilled? And that's what ODA's role is to come forward and say, yes, we would like to keep this extension in play.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioners, I would also add in here that this does not, these Division 79 rules did not address what is the interplay back and forth between our commission and the requesting agency. So to use ODA as the example, you have several extensions out there right now. We are now, in our basin plans, we have adopted rules that says, okay, water resources, you're on the hook for every biennium, we want to report to the commission on the status of extensions and the water available within those basins. So keeping this on the radar of our commission. Additionally, we the commission may request, our commission may request us to ask ODA to come make a presentation on the current status of the reservations. Is there any activity? Is there any anticipated movement? What's the next 5 years look like? So that could be in the future of ODA, should our commission request it. So let's look a little bit at what is out there right now. So this is what you have before you. Burnt River subbasin. So Burnt River is a subbasin of the Powder River. Burnt River is going to be North Fork, South Fork, and the main stem, Burnt River. Reservation for 26,300 acre feet. And it now has an expiration date or a sunset date of 2036 because it was just updated for 20 years in 2016. So you can see how those read down there. Powder River has one coming up in 2020. That has not been updated recently, so we'll have some work ahead of us working with the department. You can see Hood River, Grand Ronde, Malheur River, Owyhee have all been updated recently, so they've got a good distance before them before they need to be acted upon. Malheur Lake is out there at 2029. And Malheur Lake, by the way, is a is it Homestead Creek and tributaries, I think, is what that reservation is for. All of these reservations except the Malheur Lake have a 1992 priority date. Malheur Lake, oh gosh, did I write that down? Has a priority date of 2009, which makes sense since it's out there until 2029. This is where things start getting very interesting. These are proposed reservations that have not been adopted in basin plans. So in the Umatilla Basin, I just have a note here, postponed pending outcome of local planning efforts and federal legislation. I was not able to track down specifically what those things were, so I apologize, I don't have the detail behind those. But I'm interested in looking in to see what the local planning efforts were that addressed the Umatilla Basin Reservation, and then the federal legislation in 96. I am not sure what the detail was on that one. John Day Basin. So the storage portion of John Day Basin was postponed for review of water availability and reservation alternatives. This is an example in tracking down some people I know who have looked into these in the past and have worked in the John Day Basin. This is an example of where reservations are not wholly embraced by everybody in the basin. There's a lot of back and forth and some concerns that maybe reservations aren't in the best interest of all the players, and it just never went forward. It has never been adopted in basin plan. I believe it has a 1992 priority date at its current ask. Some hearings, or at least one hearing, was held, and it has not been followed up on. The live flow portion of the John Day Basin was postponed until a recovery plan for threatened and endangered species has been adopted. So this is the Columbia River. This has been going on since the middle, early 90s, where new uses have been basically in limbo pending this recovery plan. And we keep hearing about these judge rulings that current operations on the Columbia River dams are inadequate. Go back and do it again. That's all tied up in this recovery plan. Columbia and Snake, it's the same thing as the John Day live flow. So you're seeing some examples here of requests for live flow. The requests that come in anymore are going to be strictly for it, limited by rule, strictly for multi-purpose storage. These were older requests that actually had a live flow in the request, and again, held up pending the recovery plan on the Columbia and Snake. The Willamette Basin, pending reallocation of stored water in federal reservoirs and conversion of minimum perennial stream flows, which will be the next conversation we have here in just a moment. And the Deschutes Basin postponed at the request of BOR, pending reallocation of federal stored water. So here is part of the real complexity of reservations, where the state or state agencies are looking at an existing federal reservoir space. So this is the state saying, we are going to reserve some of that federal water. Well, there's a problem there. Okay? It's not that easy. And the federal agencies have come back and said, time out. We think this is more appropriate through a reallocation process. So that's what's being done in the Deschutes. That's what's being done in the Willamette Basin. So that's pretty high level on reservations. I was going to move on to minimum perennial stream flows, but would like to stop here and see if the commissioners have any questions about reservations.
Hi. So, again, Stephanie Halleck again. I'm looking at our resolution and that caused us to want to hear from you, and it's very straightforward, and I just wondered if you have any comments on what we might do here. The title is Reservation of Columbia River Water for Irrigation Purposes. Resolution, be it resolved that the Board of Agriculture recommends reservation of water in the Columbia River for irrigation and future agricultural needs. And then that's it, basically. And I guess when we were in our subcommittee, we were trying to figure out, is this still relevant? Has this, all of what you've been explaining, sort of negated the need for that? So any help or guidance you could give us on whether or not we should make some statement here would be helpful.
Commissioner, that's a very good question. Currently in our basin plan for the Columbia, there's just a statement, yet again another statement like you're talking about, that just says 30 million acre feet reserved for irrigation usage. Actually, there are multiple uses on there, but it's a lot of water in the Columbia, and I think it even refers to live flow. In 1995, in a letter, and there may have been previous letters to 1995, but 1995 was the most recent one that I could find, a letter from the director requesting a reservation for 1.5 million acre feet of water, a live flow and multiple uses in there. So irrigation was the largest use in that, and I would be happy to provide you with copies of any of these things that I dug up in my research here, so just don't hesitate to ask, please. 1.5 million acre feet, irrigation being the largest component of that. And that ask, which has been going on for a very long time, the fact that it's in our basin plan, but not as a reservation, but just as this 30 million acre foot classification, tells me it's been a long, ongoing conversation. I can't speak to how long the recovery plan piece is going to last, but I think it's fair to say you have an ask before the agency for a set volume of water has not been acted on. The only thing that I see stopping this from moving forward is in a report, an executive report to the 69th Legislative Committee that speaks to Oregon Department of Agriculture, agreed to postpone the ask pending the recovery plan. So that's where we're at, as best I can tell. So there is not you're not really on the hook at this time to come forward and say, quick, let's get an extension on that. It's just in limbo at this point. And we can certainly track down to see if there is something more in the legal framework about that. Would DOJ tell us that ask really needs to be updated with a current ask, if we think that would help?
Thanks. I don't know the answer to that, but that
happened. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sorry, I don't have anything more specific about guidance on your resolution. I think the resolution makes sense. I think it's sound. It's just held up by issues on the Columbia and ESA concerns. And if I'm not mistaken, that resolution was 1978. I think that would sound right. Yeah, it's been around a while. Excuse me. We're doing time-wise okay for you? This the next part, minimum perennial stream flows, will go very quickly. It's very high level. I think the lead-in here on minimum perennial stream flows is that we don't use this process anymore. So your resolution goes to the mid-80s, I think, and it was after the mid-80s, it was 1987 or so, we'll see, that the department was directed to move all of those minimum perennial stream flows into a new process. And so my goal here today is just to introduce what minimum perennial stream flows are and then what is the new process, and then you can decide how you want to treat your resolution on that. So just a little bit of history. Minimum Perennial Stream Flow Act, passed back in 1955, and all about aquatic species and minimizing pollution. They were adopted in 1964, and I think several agencies weighed in to our commission to provide them information as to what those minimum perennial stream flows should be, what those points are. Minimum perennial stream flows can be for a reach or they can be for a point. A lot of them are just for points. At this location on the stream, it should be this at this date, and generally broken out by months. So we established, or our commission at the time, or our board, established 545 of them at that time. Statute 537, 346, 1987, as I said, required us to move those into a new process. And that new process is in-stream water rights. And so we're intended to make those conversions completely in whole without change, unless, and then these are the bullets down here, we don't want them to impair other rights. If the ask that was provided, the ask that was developed under the minimum perennial stream flow is more than is needed for the public or is not in the public interest, then they would be modified. And if they were to be modified, then there will be a contested case hearing on that. So, as of today, the numbers that I was able to dig up, 504 of the 545 have been converted to water rights certificates. So quite a few of them there. The remaining 41, Willamette, Umatilla, and Walla Walla. In the Willamette, the remaining all have a component of stored water, and this significantly complicates the conversion because the volume of water that was allocated to minimum perennial stream flows as storage far exceeds the amount of water that we've got in storage. And the amount that was dedicated in the minimum perennial stream flows, the language is, can be developed up to this volume. Well, this volume blows the doors off the 1.64 million acre feet of water that we have available to work with. And so question is, what is the right volume? How much should be live flow, which live flow is pretty much set, but then there's a stored component. How much of the stored component should actually supplement that live flow piece? And so, I'll just show you that where we've got this is what we have remaining. You see over there in the Willamette Basin, all those red dots, all the dark blue lines are all converted to in-stream water rights, and what we have left are, I think, 19 or 20 in the Willamette Basin. Those all have a stored flow component to them, so they have not been dealt with. The consensus at the time, I think it's fair to say this, it was so difficult getting a start to get after these, they were so controversial, that we took on three of them back in the 90s, and that was for the Coast Fork of the Willamette, just three of them, and it took about 5 years to resolve those three. So as we were moving forward into, as I'll talk about here in just a little bit, is the Willamette reallocation process. As we were moving forward, it was very apparent that this conversion was not going to be done before the reallocation process, and actually the reallocation process makes more sense than trying to deal with these first. So stepwise, reallocation process, get through that, then we'll circle back and we'll deal with minimum perennial stream flows, and we will deal with how the reservations fit into that too, because there's Willamette reservations as well.
And what can you say again what's going on up in Northeast Oregon?
Well, those are – I can't. I am sorry. okay. This goes – I'll tell you a not a very pleasant story is I waited too late to actually circle back. And a moment ago when I said that the local planning effort back in the 90s is what prevented the Umatilla Basin reservations from moving forward, they – kind of put a hold on that. I waited too long to circle back with our good people in the Umatilla office in Pendleton, the ones that really know this stuff, and they are, their office is decimated with the flu right now, and I couldn't reach anyone. So I apologize. My plan was to get some information on that and then also get the detail on these specific minimum perennial stream flows that apparently are still in play by our records. I've run across other documents that talk about that the Willamette that still have the storage component in them are the only ones that are left. So this may just be, these may be some legacy dots here. Again, if you'd like me to follow up on that and get you that information, I'd be happy to do so. Just as soon as the quarantine is over with out in Pendleton. So in the conversion to in-stream water, from minimum perennial stream flows to in-stream water rights, we have various processes for dedicating water in-stream. This is just one process in there, and this is the conversion from, well, there's the conversion from minimum perennial stream flows to in-stream water rights, but then we also have the state agency applied for in-stream water rights. And in our rules, these would be our what are called our Division 77 rules. They're very specific that Department of Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Parks Department, Oregon DEQ, those are the three agencies that can apply for in-stream water rights. Director.
Alexis Taylor, ODA. What obviously ODFNW is pretty self-evident on what their in-stream water right would be for, but DEQ and Oregon Parks, I'd be interested what their statute gives them, why they're applying for an in-stream water right.
So, Director, their interest, I can't speak to their statute, but their interest is going to be pollution abatement or TMDLs. Or DEQ, and then Oregon Parks is recreation. And those are, I had an earlier slide that talked about aquatic species and pollution. In that evolution of statutes and rules, recreation becomes a part of in-stream water rights as well. Okay. So at least for the state applied for applications, similar to out-of-stream water rights. So if any one of you were to apply for a water right out of stream, it's going to go through a fixed process and rule. You make an application. We do a completeness review. We do a public notice. There's a public interest review. We do an initial review of a proposed final order. There's an opportunity for protest. All those steps that you go through, state agencies go through those same steps. So just to let you know that there are opportunities for protest in this. And my final point on here on this slide would be that there have been more than 900 state agency applied for in-stream water rights issued. So we have there are a number of in-stream water rights, both through conversion and both through state applied for processes for the streams in Oregon. I mentioned that this is just one process. Certainly another process is where a water right holder who has a certificate can transfer that water right or a portion of that water right to an in-stream use. And it would carry that priority date to the in-stream use. And so it's a means of dedicating some water in stream that is protectable. And we certainly have a history of going through that transfer process and protecting that water in stream. And so that summarizes that high-level look at minimum perennial stream flows and the in-stream water rights piece. So I would open it up to any questions for you here. Anything I can help you with your resolution?
Stephanie Halleck again. So I'll take a shot at this. We're trying to figure out what this resolution might become. And one of the proposed new names for it, I don't remember what the old name was, would be priority for agricultural use of water. And then in the resolution, the language we had been playing with is the Board of Agriculture believes that agriculture, along with other beneficial uses and users of water, must be considered equally and coordinated with all water resource planning and management activities in the state. That, I think, is fine. And then the second part of the resolution was, and the Board of Agriculture supports and promotes incorporation of specific positional points into the minimum stream flow determination process, which I assume from your presentation is no longer relevant. And I don't know if we wanted to keep this resolution, if you had any suggestions of how to word it correctly, given the new system.
Commissioner, clearly the new program would be referencing in-stream water rights. And I think it's appropriate for this board to have an interest in continuation of the in-stream water rights process. So we will continue to receive applications from the state agencies, ODFW, DEQ, Parks. I think it's fair that this board be apprised of those applications when they come in through your agency, perhaps, and have an opportunity to weigh in as to the interest from agriculture.
So just one follow-up. So that the reference to specific positional points, I think that's probably archaic.
It's not clear to me whether the positional points is a reference to a stated position or a positional point as into geography on a stream.
I guess we'll have to figure that out. Thank you.
Anything else this afternoon?
Alexis Taylor, ODA. Since Deputy Director Woodcock is here and some in the ag industry have requested that we flag some ongoing conversations around the Willamette Basin reallocation, I just wanted to say a couple comments. The agriculture we have some handouts of comments that they've provided to the Corps, and then obviously a more expert than myself is here to answer any, if there are any questions, or we can have obviously a larger conversation with the board at a later point if there's interest. The U.S. Corps of Engineers, they've been working on an integrated feasibility report and environmental assessment on the Willamette Basin. This began back in August of 2015, and based upon their requirements, they have 3 years to complete this. In November of last year, they released, the Corps completed and released a draft report and posted it for public comments, and that ended in January 5th. WRD is a non-federal sponsor for the Willamette Basin Review Study, and ODA has been working from a technical level with our staff and all the way up to Lisa, our Hanson Deputy Director, and myself, really closely and cooperatively with WRD really since the beginning. In response to a request that the agriculture industry made, ODA developed an analysis kind of focused on four areas: existing irrigation water demand, opportunities for additional expansion of irrigation for agricultural uses to continue to boost the state's economy, future demands to feed expanding populations in Oregon, the United States, but also around the world, and then really the potential impact of climate change. The Corps draft report presented a tentative plan for reallocating in that November draft that the agricultural industry in Oregon is not supporting. And you'll see that these comments are pretty technical, but they asked that we share them, so I wanted to. And so you'll see that in those comments. Next steps, I believe there is a meeting coming. Well, the Corps is taking the comments that they've received. We will see how they rework that, but there will be a meeting coming in March back in D.C. With the Corps. And so we just wanted to flag this issue. If there are any initial comments or questions, I thought it would be a good opportunity since Deputy Director Woodcock is here. Otherwise, like I said, we can have additional conversation at a later board meeting.
I provide just a little bit of detail in the very last piece of that. So the Corps has requested that the state provide a letter of support for the concept of using storage to help provide water, to meet our water needs, and in three categories. There's irrigation or agricultural use, there's municipal use, and there are fish and wildlife uses. What the Corps has put together and put forward, well, first I would say the state is supportive of the concept of using storage to meet our needs. Currently, those reservoirs, the 1.64 million acre feet, are encapsulated in two certificates of water use for irrigation only. This reallocation is proposing to take those certificates, modify them so that they have a municipal use, an agricultural use, and a fish and wildlife use. Additionally, they are proposing a fourth bucket, which is called joint use. And the joint use piece is one that can be used any given year to meet a shortfall in the other categories. So it's kind of an extra spending account, if you will. And at face value, it feels good to do that, but what you'll find out, what you'll see in the agricultural community comments is, hang on, we've got a better idea. We're not supportive of the allocations that are spelled out right now for agriculture. We're not supportive of what they are spelled out for the municipal. We think they were shortchanged as well. Let's take this joint use piece, which is not insubstantial. It's over 300,000 acre feet of water. Let's take this joint use piece and divide it up. So furthering how much water would be available for agriculture, furthering how much would be available for municipal. Fish, they've got a lot of water. They've got almost 1 million acre feet of water in this proposal. The folks we've been speaking with, they're not fighting the fish number. They're not happy with it. But they are talking about our time is better spent reallocating this joint use space to agriculture and municipal rather than fighting the fish number. So that is the proposal that they are pitching. I think there's merit in that. And we're talking to the Corps of Engineers about doing just that very thing. The Corps of Engineers, a reallocation process is not a small process. This really is an act of Congress. And they have to go forward with a process that is technically defensible. And so what they are doing today is combing the comments that have been received and any other information that they've got to see what can be done beyond what they have proposed already with their three water use buckets and then the joint use space. So as Director Taylor has said here, we're looking to see what they're going to come back with. We have provided a letter that just said the state supports the concept of using storage to meet these needs. The March 2nd date that you heard about, I think it may have gotten kicked back to the middle of March, but it's in March sometime. What they will be looking for in the next couple of months from the state of Oregon is a position, a state position, on those allocation buckets. So this is where things are going to get tough. We are the non-federal sponsor. We've had great partners in ODA. We've had really good partners in the ODFW as well. DEQ has been weighing in. We've been talking to the Marine Board. What we're going to have to do is come forward and say, yes, we support the numbers. No, we don't support the numbers. We support other numbers. But if we say we support other numbers, the Corps will be looking for us for some technical information to back those up. But that's going to be our charge in the next couple of months, and that's going to be pretty high level within the agencies and working with stakeholders as to how it is we settle in on some numbers.
So, Stephanie Halleck again. So, do they provide a formula or some way that they make the allocations, or do you have to come up with, or does the state have to come up with its own justification for whatever it wants?
The Corps has been working with a technical consultant to come up with numbers. They have taken information from ODA. They've taken information from Fish and Wildlife. To be in defense of the agencies as to why they are dissatisfied, why the stakeholders are dissatisfied, is the Corps did not find those numbers to be specifically on point. Much of the information that came forward to the Corps included climate change impacts out into the future. The Corps basically said, thank you, but we cannot consider climate change. We have basically an executive order, their words, an executive order telling us we can't consider climate change. So it's really a static view. What's your demand going to be in 2050? And so that's been an exercise in frustration. So they went through their exercise, working with their consultant, and largely the numbers that they derived, they got numbers from municipalities or the municipal groups, and then applied their own numbers as well to work with those. And then as far as the fish flow numbers and the agricultural numbers, fish flow, they took the biop targets at Salem and said, what's it going to take to meet those targets using stored water? And they couldn't do it just with storage alone 100% of the time. So now we have the conservation groups upset. So they said 75% of the time, it looks like we can meet the fish flow targets at Salem and still have water left over for ag and municipalities. And so ag was given an allocation number of about 270,000 acre feet. I believe municipalities were 73,000 plus or minus 1,000 acre feet for their future uses. Those are much lower than what both of those groups wanted or were expecting. And so the various groups are coming forward and say, you've got this pot of joint use water over here. Let's redistribute that to bring these two groups up. To fully answer your question, I'm sorry this is so windy, they have their formula for how it was that they came up with their numbers. If we come forward with numbers now and we say that it should be this number, I think there's going to be an expectation that we have a technical basis for that. Whether we have a formula or we have documentation with a formula embedded within it that is defensible for our position.
Any other questions for Doug? Barbara Boyer, Chair of the Board. All right. Well, I feel like I can't fully engage in that last part of the conversation until I read this document, but I know it's going to be an ongoing conversation.
So if I may make an offer, Doug, for the record, Doug Woodcock, if I may make an offer to come back anytime, if you have further questions, would like more detail on any of the topics, the reservations, the in-stream water rights, the reallocation, I'd be happy to do so. And just to circle back around, any assignments you would like me to track down and get back to the board, if you could feed them through the department, we talk on a daily basis.
Just one last question. Is there a timeline for the this whole decision process?
Yes, there is. That answer is that in the next couple of months, so by May, we will have to have a state position on that to see whether we can actually formulate a state position. So we've been cruising along here, working with the Corps, and things have been getting more and more active. They're about to go exponential because we have a very short window to decide whether we can actually meet a state position or not. And the Corps is expected to have, I have a note here, so I get the right, term here on the next steps. Oh, here we go. Next steps will be final chief's report. That's what I'm after. So in the Corps, there will be a final chief's report in August of 2018, specifically August 17th of 2018. And that is then what will be going to Congress. So we have a very short fuse now.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Chair Boyer and Commission.
All right. Thanks very much, Doug. Barbara Boyer. Sorry. This is also new. I got to remember to identify myself. Laura, you're old hat at this because you do it at OWEB. So at this time, I think I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and we're going to go into subcommittees. And then Natural Resources is meeting right here in this room. And which one is it? Land Use is across the hall in room D. And we will head into subcommittees. Thank you.